Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this, the first of the new Audit and Accounts Committee meeting. Start with agenda item number one, which is the minutes of the 25th of March. Are there any comments? Are you all happy for me to sign them off? Is that a yes?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Apologies?
Councillor Barron substituted by Councillor Leeson.
Welcome. And we move on now to officers' reports. 3A, the Alpha Auditor's Annual Report. Judith.
Chair, you've got that frank and offer apologies on behalf of Lizette. Andrew Reed is unable to attend tonight. I say he was planning on it, but I say he sent an email this morning. I'm not going to attempt to present all of his report in the detail that he would have done, but I'll just explain for members what it is and a couple of key points from our perspective. Andrew has said if you've got any detailed questions that we're able to deal with between us, then we can send them off to you and we can give them back to the committee. So, in essence, this is kind of their end of year report that wraps up quite a number of pieces of work that they've been doing throughout the year. So some bits in here will seem familiar to you, particularly that the references to the statement of accounts where they said that they had been able to do sufficient work to conclude an opinion. That's already been reported to the committee previously. The main area that's new is the more detailed information that's come forward on value for money. I think there was a passing reference in their previous report, but this is now the full report that sets out their value for money conclusions for 24-25. And if I refer you to the table on page 11, that sounds very nicely across the key elements of the value for money assessment that they have to do, kind of their conclusions and ultimate findings, really. So you'll see, looking at the colour coding on the right hand side, that they're satisfied with three of the areas, and then there are two where they badge those as significant weaknesses. But I would ask the committee to note that this is a significant improvement on where we were a couple of years ago, when we had a statutory recommendation and we had four key recommendations. And I think that's what this report seeks to do. It seeks to reflect the work that's been going on over the last 2 years and where we have made improvements. At the end of the report, there is an action plan, and there are actually a couple of new areas that they flag in there as well. But they tend to be, they call them their other recommendations. So I'd say, generally speaking, you know, that's quite a positive report for us. Has anybody else got any more detail? I would do my best to answer them.
How they're getting on with auditing the previous year's accounts today, progress?
I couldn't give you a definitive answer, but what they have got in place is what they've called the Building Back programme, so they're just doing it in pieces. We certainly aren't anywhere close to being able to sign off a set of accounts at the moment, I say, but it's a gradual degree of different areas that they're looking at. But that really is one for the external auditors and for Chris Wallace, who's the 151 officer, to give the committee a more detailed update. We could perhaps do that at the next meeting.
Okay. Happy with the answer?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
How is the appointment of staff going, the recruitment side of things?
Mixed. I know they've been out and they've interviewed for one of the posts in the team, and I have to confirm with them that when I spoke to Chris, they were intending to make an offer on that one, but they were also going out to try and recruit to the two of the more difficult ones. I'm not sure whether they've actually gone out to Ashford yet, but we are still struggling to find suitable candidates, really. It's not one that affects this council, but we'd have to replace the HRA accountant for Kevin. We've managed to get somebody that only is an interim, but we have not to recruit them on that one yet. But they are still trying, but the posts that they offered, or were offering on, were lower down in the team.
Just to follow up on that, have we tried to see if other councils, either locally or not so locally, have capacity that we could borrow by
I don't think it's that straightforward. I don't think many of them have got much capacity. I know Chris has been talking to his colleagues. It's probably better for him to explain the conversations he's had. But I don't know that anybody has necessarily got the capacity themselves to have spare to loan to us. And it's not that straightforward because they've got to understand our systems as well. So there's an element of training. By the time we've got the training, it would be useful. Or the LGR at the moment.
Are you happy? Okay.
Another question, please, Will.
Yeah, please.
Through you, Chair. On page 12, first item. And recommendation, ensure it has adequate capacity, which we've talked about. But ensure that budget holders receive formal financial monitoring reports during the year. How are we getting on with that?
We're not, as you'll see in the action plan for the annual government statement. Our response to that is that whilst we'll endeavour to keep trying to recruit, and then to that situation we can't guarantee it, so at the moment we're operating on a minimum reporting of twice a year. But that said, managers do have access to the system, so they are able to go in and look at the information for themselves. It's not quite the same as having the monitor reports, but managers do have access. But we're not in a position to provide them with more regular formal monitoring reports at the moment.
Do heads of department go through with their teams financial reports on a regular routine basis?
On the basis they don't get them printed, that would be quite difficult for them. Whether some of them do when they for the couple of times a year that they do get it, I can speak to other heads of service. So it will be mixed up, I imagine. But as I say, we're not in a position that we would like to be in terms of being able to have all the information regularly, to have all the routine meetings with the finance team as well. Some people do. Some people, you know, have regular contact with their accountant, and we'll discuss it.
So
again, it depends on service need and complexity.
So we're running large scale capital projects.
I would say that on those ones that are more regular meetings, that's why I'm saying that it was very low on those ones. But largely, for some of those sorts of things, that are often grant returns and claims that have to be done, so they have to be maintained. So although our routine budget monitoring reports aren't always there, there are grant claims, there are lots of other returns that require us to account for that spend, and certainly for the big schemes that I think there will be regular returns on those for the thing. And the 151 officer has to sign those off personally.
So how are we doing against budget then?
I couldn't comment on that, I don't know.
Because if they go wrong, they'll go wrong in a spectacular way.
So that would be for the Section 151 officer to comment on. I say, he does work on those, that those ones are looked at and they are monitored to a degree.
Perhaps, Mr. Chair, we could ask him to come along to the next meeting and give us an update on how our controls are getting on.
Okay.
I would just need to be clear, though, from a process point of view, that's entirely proper for this committee. If it's actual how they're doing budget actual, that's a matter of scrutiny.
I'm sorry, Julia.
If you want to just understand the grant claim process, the monitoring that he does on those, as a process thing, that is within the remit of this committee. If what you want in an update on is the difference between, you know, the budget versus actual, that's a matter for scrutiny, not for the audit committee.
No, I will ask even the scrutiny committee about that. But in this committee, what I'd like to see is how we're getting on with the routine monitoring, particularly as we've got large-scale projects running, which could be very damaging for this council if they go wrong.
And so I'll happily ask him to update.
So it's the process
meeting.
I'm looking.
But as I have said, in general terms, we are accepting the position we're in at the moment, that we're not able to recruit, we cannot aspire to the recommendation of the external auditors, and we've noted that in this report, in the action plan, and in our own action plans.
Has that reflected on the risk register? If I could ask the supplementary, Mr. Chair.
We've got a financial risk on the risk register, but it's not in that regard. We have taken a slightly different stance on that. So.
Yeah. because as you know that I've brought the issue forward a number of times, the actual spend on these projects is greater than the council's annual spend, and so any overrun would be very impactful. Therefore, to try and get a routine process to monitor where we are on a regular basis so you can exercise management control is highly desirable.
In terms of those schemes and projects, there are slightly different arrangements in place. That's how I've just commented generally across the piece of the council of its budget monitoring that we're not able to aspire to return to quarterly reporting at the current time.
Right.
But I say in terms of the bigger schemes, they are monitored through a different set of controls and processes.
So can I just clarify, do you want 151 to come and talk to us about the process in this committee, and then for him to go to resources for the figures?
For actual results.
Right.
I think we'd have to check, Chair, whether it's actually the Resources Committee or whether it would be the Economic Development Committee.
Whichever.
Yeah. Oh, whichever.
Whichever.
Whichever he goes to, I'll come along to.
Sometimes we get stuck in a bit of a bureaucratic sort of loop here. And although we're not able to ask for the figure, I'd like to know if such a figure is available, whether it's been given to the relevant scrutiny committee. So I support what Councillor Dobson said.
Judith, I think it goes, that's not for here, is it? It's for the, which scrutiny would it be?
I don't know, that's what I'm saying, we'd need to double check where the responsibility lies on that. I can say that routine financial monitoring isn't reported to any scrutiny committee at the moment, and that's part, that is linked to this, that we don't have the capacity to do that, that monitoring and reporting in that way. Behind the scenes, internally on the bigger schemes, it's done, but it isn't formally monitored through scrutiny.
Yeah.
Or indeed cabinet at present.
So can we ask which scrutiny committee will be looking at that, and then so that we can either go along as members or.
Mr. Chair, could I ask the cabinet member for resources if he's got any views on this piece?
I actually accept the points you're making. And it would be helpful to have more scrutiny of the procedures.
Okay.
I will wait with bated breath. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any further questions on the first item on our agenda? Nope. Okay, if I can move you on now to section 3, Bravo, Governance Improvement Plan and the Progress Report for Quarter 4, 25-26, starting on page 42.
Thank you, Chair. That's me as well. I'm not going to dwell on this too much either, because in actual fact, much of this has been superseded by the report that's now looking on, is the last item on the agenda. But this does give you a position statement at the end of the year about progress in delivering the improvement plan that we have had in place for the last couple of years now. So members will recall previously we've been reporting some slippage in the middle of the year due to what we've been doing on LGR, and we've managed to turn some of that around in quarter four, not to the position we would have hoped, but we have managed to improve on that position. And if you take that together with the previous amount of actions, I think it says that we've done 61% of the original plan, and as we've just heard from the external auditor's report, they can acknowledge the progress, the journey that we have made along the way. Originally I'd set out in there an action plan that was kind of a revision, saying the original all the ones that were left, that rolling those forward to say these are things we need to do. I'd also built in the external auditor's recommendations, and was bringing that as a standalone action plan. But I say we've now got a more comprehensive action plan, because we've now done the review of annual governance as well. So I say, by all means, the committee can note that one, but there's a more up-to-date one on the last item on the agenda.
Anybody want to ask any questions on this one? Okay, well, we are asked to note the progress made in the delivery of the governance improvement plan set out in Appendix 1. Do we so note?
Yes, we do.
Thank you. And secondly, to approve the revised governance improvement plan 26-27 set out in Appendix 2, subject to any further additions arriving from the annual governance statement for 25-26. So approved?
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. We now move on to our next item, which is 3 Charlie, update strategic risk register, starting on page 67.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll take members through this report. So this is an update of the strategic risk register, but it is a full review that we have done with leadership team to produce a new risk register for 25-26. So this is, whilst it is a continuation, it has been reviewed and refreshed to bring the position. Members who've been on the committee will recall that we bring the full risk register to this meeting, and then we update the audit committee with progress in relation to the red risks in between, just so that you can focus on those highest ones. But we do think it's important that you see the whole risk register, the whole strategic risk register, at this meeting. We have a table that shows you a summary of the risks, which is Appendix 1, and then the detail of each risk is set out at Appendix 2. A particular reference for this committee is that your remit is to monitor the progress of the action plans, so that it's those action plans that follow each risk set out, and those detailed pages start on page, sorry, those detailed reports are on page 74 onwards. So there is a brief summary of the risk, current risk scores, the inherent risk, and the residual risk controls are in place. As you can see from the majority of the risks there, there hasn't been a lot of progress from the previous update, but we do set out some actions in most cases of where they are. What probably is useful for members is to consider the position of that risk. Are you happy with the actions that officers are putting forward, and are you comfortable with the risks and the forward plan we have for trying to get that risk down? It is telling that a couple of those risks, particularly the capacity risk, we're at target, and that target is a 12, which is still high risk. So there are some areas where management are saying that we can't reduce those risks further. And again, it might be for the committee to consider whether they are comfortable with that position as well that officers are putting forward. So I won't go through it page by page, but I'm quite happy to take questions on any of the risks that management have put forward.
Open to the floor.
It's a bit chicken and egg, isn't it, really? We're going through a reorganisation. The management of the organisation will be concentrating on its risks when it gets there. So we almost are having to say that we're going to have to wait until the new chickens are in the roost before we can actually make meaningful comment about whether we're happy with it or not, because we can say we're very unhappy with a 12 risk continuing on the register, but we know that you've got very little you can do about it until you've got the new organisation in place. So we really making comment against almost empty air.
To a degree, yes, but the reality is there are things that can and should be doing progressing between now and the abolition of this council. There are actions, they are set out in there.
Yeah.
We are expecting them to be implemented and to try and either reduce or at least contain the risk at a level.
Yeah.
We certainly, as a leadership team, are not in a position of having given up and said we're not looking to do anything. We recognise we have challenges, but we are still seeking to try and reduce those scores where we can.
And I think, Chair, through you, Chair, there are a number of the actions that are showing that we should hopefully see progress, and some of those are coming down. It is just a few of the risks where they're almost at the target score, but that target score is above the council's risk appetite.
Yeah.
Most of these are areas where we would hope that they can come down if management deliver the action plans that they have set out. And I think that's the remit of this committee, is to look at that, to ask for comments where necessary, and to consider the implications for the council's governance arrangements with the information we have here, and also in the following reports, the annual audit report and the annual governance statement, because there are commonalities and themes that will go through all of those documents, and this is a building block for the AGS that's on the end of the agenda, right, to inform what the chair has to sign.
I could go on for ages, but I won't. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We can look outside until the weather's like today, and I'm going to raise again the absence of climate change as a risk to the ability of this council to deliver its services. If we had this weather for another week, that would have a substantial impact on the ability of the council to deliver its services, and the absence of climate change as a specific risk on here, I think, is an oversight, which I've raised previously, but I will raise again. And I think the weather outside gives a good example why we should be considering it as a specific risk. It's a risk that links to the safe management of trees. It's a risk that links to health and safety arrangements for people, but it's an existential risk to the delivery of a number of services across the country.
Chair, if you can, if the committee wants to, they can ask that for that reference to go back to the cabinet, for the cabinet to consider whether they wish to add it to the risk register. But that's not an actual step we've taken before, but the committee can do that if the committee is in support.
Or second that.
Yeah. So be it.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else from this?
No.
Okay, so. So the recommendation is that the Audit Committee note the draft strategic risk register and considers the progress made in the identification and management of the strategic risks. Is everyone happy with that? Okay, all right, thank you. We now move on to 3 Delta. And 3 Delta is the internal audit annual report 25-26, starting on page 98.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'll take members through this one again. This is the annual internal audit annual report, which, as it says, is a review of the year. So it summarises the work of internal audit, but it also covers a few other areas, including the effectiveness of internal audit, our compliance with standards, and internal audit's performance. Before I go on to the body of the report, I would like to draw members' attention to Appendix 1 that starts on page 102, because these are reports that the committee has received. Most of the rest of the content of the report, in terms of the audits that we are talking to you about, or including in that report, will have passed through this committee in the periodic updates that I bring. But this appendix summarises the items that we've done since the last update. As you can see, there are 2 audits that we have given limited assurance in since that period. The new CRM system, the customer relationship system, and closed churchyards. And there are a number of audits that we have given partial assurance to as well. And the reasons for those are set out. In addition, on page 107, we have a follow-up that we have done that hasn't been reported to the committee before, and that's on civil contingencies, which was partial when we did the audit, and at this follow-up it still remains partial for the reasons set out in the comments. So that is information that the committee hasn't had and hasn't had chance to raise any points on. In terms of Appendix 2 to the report, this is the detailed annual report, and it sets out with some background about the reasons for internal audit, the work that we do, and the reporting process. Probably the first thing that I will draw to members' attention is paragraph 1.7, which is on page 111 of the report, and that is the review of internal audit. So this is setting out the review of the effectiveness of internal audit. It is primarily based on an internal review of compliance with the new internal audit standards that we've had to follow from the 1st of April 2025, but it does take reference back to our last external review where we had an external assessor come in, which was done in 2022. The section is required in the standards to have one of those every 5 years, and that external report to come to committee. In terms of that, the review is that we are generally in conformance with the standards, we are complying with the requirements, and we have effective policies and procedures in place to ensure the quality of the work that we do. So things like file reviews and supervisory reviews of the work. So that is to give you, hopefully, reassurance that the contents of this report are sound and are based by effective findings and an effective function. Probably the next bit is a little bit of discussion about how we do the work and the audit plan and the relationship between this report and the annual governance statement. And there is some summary of that work over pages 112, 113. I think a key note is on page 113 that we haven't given anything, no assurance, which would be almost saying that there aren't effective procedures and we are open to high risks in that audit areas. However, we have got two limited audit assurances in the year, and paragraph 211 on page 113, there is a summary there of work that we've done and follow-ups, and there are currently 32 audit areas that are below substantial assurance, including 3 limited assurances for Stafford Borough. So that's giving you the wider context of how this report fits into previous works as well. And it's really geared up to the box at towards the bottom of page 113, which is my annual conclusion on the effectiveness of governance, risk management and internal control. And as members can see at paragraph 216, I'm giving limited assurance that we have effective governance, risk management and internal control environments at the council based on the internal audit work that we've done. And that is probably about the third or fourth year that we've had that assurance. Prior to that, it was partial for a number of years. So it is reflective of the position that we are in and the work that we are finding. And that's reflective of the external auditors, VFM report. Whilst things are improving, they are still highlighting a number of areas. I think, as well as the performance issues that we set out in the report, there are some significant areas of concern, and particularly the list of common issues that we see, which are at paragraph 3.10 on page 116. Members who've been on the committee for a few years will probably recognise that list because it has been fairly consistent and unchanged for a number of years of those same key issues. And say it's same themes that we are seeing in audit reports in terms of procurement processes not always being adequately followed, issues around when contracts need to be relet or what they are, poor project management, lack of awareness of key governance issues, including compliance with financial regs, scheme delegations and codes of conduct, issues around data protection impact assessments for contracts and data transfers, and also a lack of or out-of-date key policies and strategies, and finally a lack of clarity over responsibilities for buildings, their maintenance and routine compliance inspections. And some of those issues are clear in this report but are also reflective of previous years as well. In terms of the work, I don't really want to draw anything else particular for members' attention in that, but I am happy to answer questions on that. So we have set out all of the audits we've done in the appendices and the assurances that we've given to give you that full picture. But the highlight is I am essentially saying limited assurance. The conclusion is that we have limited assurance that we have effective governance, risk management and internal control systems at the council. Based on our work.
I was just going to ask a question on the 32. Is that a big percentage or a small percentage of the total number? I'm just giving us an idea of whether a lot's been complied with or not a lot.
I mean, in when we look across what we do, we will have done on average 20, maybe 25 audits some years. So, and that goes back to 2022. So in 4 years, probably 60, 70 audits that we will have done. And some of those are audits that we had done previously, but we hadn't completed all of the follow-ups on. So that picture is there. But it is a reasonable percentage of the overall audits completed are less than substantial assurance. And where we've done follow-ups, they haven't addressed all of the sufficient of the recommendations to get them up to substantial at follow-up. And as members can see from the summary of follow-ups in this annual audit report, we will have followed some audits up 3-4 times just in what we're reporting this year. So it is, I think, indicative of a number of issues, whether that's capacity, whether that's drive or ability to get some of these things in place. Some recommendations are going to take time, and some recommendations can take a year or more to put in place if it's fundamental changes. Others should be done more quickly and perhaps are not progressing as quickly as I would like to bring that assurance up.
Just to follow up on, was it on page 116, it's got here poor project management processes, including missing a poor quality project risk register. Just going back to what we talked about earlier, I found that worrying coupled with the
It is a common theme that we see, particularly on some of the smaller projects where we are doing them in house. I think members will remember Chris has been here before, and he's spoken about the capacity and the issues we have internally in terms of lack of skilled resources, because we don't do these things very often, and we're reliant on officers who are doing it for their departments, who might do a big project once every 5, 6, 7 years. We don't have an established project management function who can parachute in some of those resources to assist managers. Where we're talking about the big regeneration projects, we do buy in support. But sometimes that can lead to lead to risk registers being there, but where you're asking a contractor or a consultant to do it on our behalf, they don't always capture all of the risks from the council's perspective, particularly if you're talking about risks of the contractor failing. So if we ask them to do the risk register, they're never going to put the risk of them failing on there. If we ask consultants to do it, they're not going to ask for consultants missing things or consultants giving us poor advice. So there are always some inherent risks that we have to retain ownership for, even if we do get external support. And we quite often see those things missing because they just say, well, we're buying that in, they do the risk register, isn't that enough? And we do see that time and time again. And it rolls out wider into some of the IT procurement, because they are projects in their own right. IT procurement and implementation, again, we get some support from IT, but IT resources are stretched and can only do so much support. So it is down to managers managing their own areas. And it probably is indicative of the size of the council that we're at, that we don't have a lot of specialist teams that bigger authorities can have.
On page 116, 310, what can be done about dealing with all these?
I suppose, Chair, that is the $1 million question, and if I had that answer and I could give it to leadership team, we would have had these addressed many years ago. It is something that is intrinsic to where we are as an organisation and the risk that we're facing. As you've seen in the risk register, we have capacity issues, we have finance issues. With ultimate capacity, ultimate resources, some of these things would go away. As we say, better risk management for projects would come with having dedicated project management resources, specialists in that area. They could help you do those, the whole project management better than perhaps we deliver at times. Some of it comes through training and ability to deliver that training, and we may be able to do some of that. Where it's be in the middle, the employee lack of awareness of governance documents, codes of conduct and things like that, we perhaps have a little bit more scope to do that with things like refreshing codes of conduct, delivering more training, utilising perhaps some online refresher training and that type of thing, rather than committing a lot of time to get people in the room. So that there are things that can be done, and some of those are things that the council is looking to roll out in the current year or the next 18 months. I do know we have got a new code of conduct on the horizon. We've got new values that we're trying to instill. Some of it comes down to management ability as well. So have we got effective managers able to roll that out and work with their teams and pick up poor behaviour, or do they turn a blind eye to people who are perhaps more difficult to manage? I don't think there is one easy answer to addressing that list. It is a combination of factors, but it is something that we do need to work harder to, particularly if management wants my conclusion to improve in the coming years and to be able to give a better opinion, because I don't get any joy out of giving a conclusion like that to the council, particularly 2-3 years running. I'd like to be saying we're doing everything well, and what we can recommend is enhancements and best value improvements, tweaks to what we're doing, rather than recommending we need to fundamentally rethink this, or we need to give training because our staff don't have the skills.
Who or which department do you think should be leading on dealing with all of this?
Is that Judith volunteering?
Well, Chair, if I may, he's a good chunk of this is around my area and Deputy Chief Exec for Resources. And the last item on the agenda, to a degree, will cover some of that as well, because you know the same sort of messages that are flowing through into it, and as Stephen has touched on, some of the key themes there we are trying to tackle. So at the back end of this year, we have done work around both the code of conduct for employees, the code of governance that's on the next item as well. We're bringing in a new learning and development platform, which will allow us, as Stephen has just alluded to roll out some of these documents and snippets of training in a way that we've not been able to do before. Mm-hmm. So there are some of the things, they're small bite-sized chunks to start to gradually change that awareness, the culture. Off the back of the code of conduct, we've put some values in, it has a set of behaviours in there. So we are trying to plug away at that underlying framework to try and build that. And then there's some practical things. You know, Stephen's talked about project management. We don't have a specialist team, but we are going to try and organise some project management training. I don't have the team to create the toolkit, but I'd say we'll run some training around it as well. We want to try and instil a culture of learning and best practice as well. So, and some of that will come out from the experiences that we're finding as well. So you know, we are still trying to do things. I don't think we'll ever get to the end of the list, and the challenges we face, you know, around capacity mean that sometimes there just isn't enough hours in the day to do everything. But you know, we are still trying. We have not given up. And I think the positive is that we are very open, reflective and honest in our assessments, and as long as we're doing that, we can then at least try and move forward. You know, we're not trying to push anything under the carpet.
I think, Chair, if I may, I think that is a key point from this, is that whilst it's not a good message, it's a message that's gone to leadership team that is being taken seriously. I think Tim is concerned that this is several years, and we've had the external auditors VFM report negative, and we've tried to put a lot in. And can we bring this down? Can we turn it around? So it's on his radar. He's wanting to address it now. We've had time to do that. But we do need to change a lot of things. We change, need to change culture. We need to train managers, heads of service and leadership team up into what they might need to be looking for, what things might they need to be reality checking or having on their radar on a periodic basis. So we're talking about compliance inspections and maintenance on properties and areas that we own. Do we get reports up to relevant heads of service, relevant leadership team saying, actually, we've got X number of defects that we just don't have the money to resource, or it takes us 12 months to repair the path, which we know has got potholes in, that is a trip hazard. So the council is being more open and honest and transparent and talking about these things rather than them sitting lower down and we reporting it doesn't go anywhere. Mm. It is just that. It's that proverbial oil tanker. We are in a position where we are. There's a lot of things needed to turn it around, and we may not have all of the skills, but hopefully we are heading in the right direction, or if we put the right things in place, we can head in the right direction to slowly bring that improvement in place.
I mean, does this need to go, Ralph, I'm looking at you. Does this need to go back to Cabinet to look at?
Well, I was just wondering, Chair. This is the Audit and Accounts Committee.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this committee would have a role. I recall, not that long ago, when we had a problem with fire certificates, this committee invited the head of that section in for question and answer session. Find out what was going on. And I'm particularly concerned that when we have an internal audit, things aren't done fully, anything like fully, and there's a follow-up and things are still not done. Mm. And I wonder if that could be a role, an important role for this committee to actually have that section head or whatever coming to this committee to explain what's happening and why it hasn't been done and when it's going to be done.
That's always the when, yeah. Mm.
Yeah. As I was going to say, Chair, it is in the committee's remit to ask heads of service to explain their the audit reports or their lack of progress in implementing internal audit recommendations, so that you can satisfy yourselves that they are taking every appropriate action, or where they're unable to progress things, that you are comfortable that that is an appropriate answer, and that we are appropriately living with risks, because sometimes we may not be able to bring everything in place, as we've discussed a few times already tonight. Capacity, staffing, resources may be issues that are holding some of these things back. But we don't want to be complacent and just say things aren't moving because we don't have capacity, we haven't got any staff. Because there are some areas where we might need to move things forward, whether that's in the risk register, whether that's in the internal audit action plans. We don't want to live with risks that are totally unacceptable just because we manage to say, oh, I don't have the resources to do this. There may be times where we have to ask them to consider reallocating resources they have from lower areas to address some of these risks. And it is in the committee's remit to decide on any report. I think the guidance we would always give is, if it was no assurance, I would particularly recommend that the committee ask the head in urgently. If it's limited or partial, I would probably be advising you to give them chance to do a follow-up, for them to put things in place. If it's limited and it's still limited at follow-up, you may want to consider asking them in or providing a written update so that you can then decide whether you want them at the next committee. It is in your gift as well to ask for those answers to be provided in writing in between meetings. And again, particularly if there's follow-ups that aren't progressing and we've had 3-4 follow-ups, they're sitting at partial or limited assurance, again, I would be advocating that you consider asking the head in to explain.
Mm. I was going to say, I think we ought to do it sooner rather than later, because then by the time it's the next meeting, and then the meeting after that, and trying to remember when it was last reviewed. So I think we should call somebody in, decide perhaps which is the biggest risk we want to consider, and call the head of that department in.
There's a couple of things, just kind of following up on that. My read of it is that there potentially isn't just one head of service that's relevant here. Where we're talking about these, they actually cut across a number of different areas. Like procurement process is not always being followed, isn't a finance team issue.
It's
actually the teams doing the procurement. The issues around that are going to be there, and there. So that these overarching issues are the ones I think are addressed by what Judith has said. I think where we have, where there's a need to bring people in is where we've got much more specific issues. And I think the area to me that looks like an area that there are specific issues that we could is actually the final bullet point, lack of clarity over responsibilities. And I would suggest that actually it's not just a lack of clarity of responsibilities for buildings, it's open spaces as well, as the closed churchyards suggest. It's not just buildings, it's open spaces. The tree management comes in under that, and asking questions of why there is that lack of clarity. Because when you look at the limited assurance for the closed churchyards, that's the underlying reason for that is lack of clarity over who's responsible for what. Right, these are the specific issues, but the reason those specific issues exist is because of that lack of clarity. And I think asking questions of that, why the lack of clarity exists and what it is, crucially, what is being done about it, because the things that Judith has brought up aren't going to address the lack of clarity. They're not going to actually deal with that particular part of the issues that are being identified here. They will deal with potentially, hopefully, the procurement side of things. They will hopefully deal with the kind of conduct side of things. They hopefully will deal with some of the project management things, but they won't deal with the lack of clarity. That's actually a slightly different issue that isn't, I'm not hearing a plan of action to address.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's so many things in here that need sorting out without delay, really. I mean, you mentioned about the closed churchyard. It says it's not possible to verify the documentation for 5 of the 7 closed churchyards to ensure that they're closed. Well, if they're not closed, then that's our responsibility, surely. The other thing is, memorial testing hasn't been done. Then you've got problems with the payroll, where there's been people that have been overpaid on the mileage. The fact that there's no evidence of the validation check by the payroll supervisors of manual calculations. Then you've got the things to do with civil contingencies. The fact that there isn't any rest centres in place and so on, the list of rest centres. I mean, the thing is, with climate change we've seen heavy rain and flooding and various other things. Surely these are the things that we should have in place ready, so that if there is an emergency, we know exactly where these rest centres can be and all the other things. I mean, there used to be a committee years ago that used to deal with, a separate committee. As I say, the control centres and all this sort of thing all need to be in place so that if there is an emergency, they can be implemented.
Judith?
I could answer that. I think you should be on ahead. It's a difficult one. Undoubtedly, there are things we can do better, but it will take time. And I think, just as a committee, you just need to think for now which ones do you want to. I mean, you picked a really interesting one, in terms of that lack of clarity of responsibility of ownership of land. It's a really interesting. If we were in scrutiny, I'd be saying, why don't you have a task and finish group to have a look at that? Like I say, it would be quite easy if you wanted us to bring a couple of the heads of service, because that definitely cuts across more than one area, to have that, so they could explain why that is so complicated and what the issues are. That definitely isn't a quick fix one.
I think I would like to know what we're doing about it. I think that the crucial thing is what we're doing about it. I get that it's complicated.
Following up on that point, it's like the contact list is not updated. I don't know how many people are on the contact list or how long it would take just somebody to go down and phone those people up or email them and see how many are actually missing. I mean, I don't know, I always thought it would be a massive amount of people, you know, I thought it would take that long to do.
I think if I may share with some of these things, it's the fact that we have volunteers on the list, but nobody's checked that they're still happy to volunteer, or whether they've moved on or numbers have changed, and it's that is that particular one. Things like the rest centre plan, we have a rest centre plan, we have rest centres identified. I know that from work that we've done. What we haven't done is refreshed it in a while, made sure that the policies, procedures, phone numbers, again in that have been checked. So it's, I think if there was an emergency, we would probably get by, but there's a lot of documentation that needs updating, and in an ideal world would be reviewed and refreshed. But again, some of it comes back to capacity and issues about getting those things through. And it is, it's a difficult one. And then there's plans in place for some of these things. I mean, the closed churchyards, again, it's something that is, there's certain regular tasks that get done, but nobody thinks about the bigger picture. And around that, we've got 5 out of 7. We don't think there's paperwork here. But if we've been cutting the grass for 20, 30, maybe, I don't know if it's one here, I know one when I looked elsewhere. I think the churchyard was closed in 1870. If we can't find the paperwork for that, but we've been cutting the grass and maintaining the churchyard for that long, I think we've accepted responsibility. Mm. But it is some of this that we just don't know. It's there. And it's that lack of records, and it goes across the board, as you say, with some other land ownership. We have come across issues elsewhere of not necessarily knowing if a building or a piece of land is ours. We might be cutting the grass, we may not be cutting the grass, and it's normally when something happens or something goes wrong that it's suddenly a sort of big exercise to try and dig to find out whose it is it ours. But if you've been maintaining it, you've almost accepted some of that liability, even if it isn't. And I think this is where it comes into understanding our risks and our exposure to a lot of things, is knowing what we've got and where some of these issues are.
So essentially what we want to know is whether action is being taken about all these on 3.10, is that correct? How many heads of service are we going to call in next time? Every single one of them?
Potentially all of them. I mean, is it something that we can... I'm just wondering whether it's better to get a written update from
leadership
on some of the cross-cutting issues.
I would suggest
individual
that.
Heads. But there may be some individual audits that you want to call somebody in or a specific question.
Chair, I'd say the vast majority of things in 3.10 are largely covered within the action plan that sat at the back of the annual government statement.
Right.
Not all, but the vast majority of them will be covered in there. I think it is about just teasing out whether there were specific audit areas that relate back to a service manager, that's a service that we can identify.
And as I say, I'd probably, Chair, if I may, the focus to me would be maybe the ones that are limited assurance, unless you want to give managers time to put those in place. But certainly, as this is the annual report, looking at the follow-ups at the end, which is where's the appendix? I've lost which page it's on. That's appendix 2 that starts on page 1, 2, 3 of the agenda, page 15 of this actual report, and look at some of those that have remained partial assurance at follow-ups. And if you look at the first few of those on the list, some are fourth follow-up, some are third follow-up, those are ones that we've followed up multiple times, and you may want some update on some of those in particular, where they've been done a number of times. That shows that we perhaps haven't had the progress we want. We tend to follow up every 6 months, so if we're on a fourth follow-up, that's a significant time since that audit report was issued.
Well, looking at these first three then, fourth follow-up, third and third, Should we ask for the heads of service for those three to submit a update within the next period? What period would you suggest? I mean, you know, for tomorrow at 12:30?
Yeah.
That,
it depends. Are you just looking for a written update between now and the next meeting, or are you looking for the head of service to attend the next meeting to explain? If it's a written update, I think probably 2 to 3 weeks,
yeah.
I think, is what we did for the last one.
Yeah.
I think, Chair, if you have a written update, it gives you a chance outside the meeting to decide, do you want them to attend the next meeting, or are you satisfied with the responses? And we're not waiting till the next meeting
exactly.
for them to come and explain themselves. Yeah. And if it, maybe you want to look at anything that's perhaps over 2 follow-ups and is still partial, that gives... I know I'm adding to the list, which has probably won't thank me for, but there's a couple slightly lower down that are perhaps third follow-up and still partial.
Yeah, third,
so if I don't know, it's up to the committee, but that would be perhaps a reasonable sort of suggestion that you would maybe do anything over 2 or 3 follow-ups.
I mean, I'd like to invite somebody, because I've been on this committee about last year, and I've never seen anybody ask to attend the meeting. I just thought it might be nice just to show us on the heads of service that we exist.
It's not supposed to be nice.
Right. Well, here's a suggestion I've got, and that is that to ask for all of the ones that are fourth follow-up, third follow-up and second follow-up, to give them 3 to 4 weeks. Let's give them, I'll be generous, 2 days. 3 weeks to submit a report to this committee. We can then look at that. All right, and then decide whether the next meeting is in September.
Yeah.
Whether we're satisfied with the report they've given us, or whether we want them to turn up.
Okay.
Would you all be happy with that?
Yes.
I mean, I would, but it does worry me how time drags on, and then what would the next meeting after that be?
This was the point I think we're making is if we do. If you just get the head of service in next meeting, that's September, then we don't get an answer, right? Then it goes on to the next meeting. Whereas at this, what I'm suggesting at this process, by getting them to do a written report within, say, 3 or 4 weeks, we can then look at it and then decide whether we want, whether we're satisfied with the progress they're making. And if not, we can then call the head of service in on our September meeting.
Chair, could I also suggest, picking up that and the list of concerns at 3.10, if we note the committee's concern and ask that be taken back to leadership team, and then we could do a collective leadership team response as well on those issues. So you've made your point in kind of 2 ways there, and that could have that set of intent so that our members of the leadership team are very clear that if you're not seeing progress, you will be expecting people to come along and explain, so we can start that as a path if the committee are content with that.
Everyone happy?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, we'll go with that. Okay. So we get the written reports for these. All right. Give me a time frame.
Could we say 3 weeks, because I'm mindful that we're getting into a season where people are starting to go on leave and...
Sorry. Going on what? You're next going to tell me a word called holiday, and I still want still need someone to find a dictionary for me to understand what that word means. But there we go. So 3 weeks. Yeah, okay, it's 3 weeks from today. Is that one happy? So every 4, 3, and 2.
Yeah.
Okay. Will that be then emailed out to all the committee?
Yes,
the responses.
We'll collate
it.
We'll talk to the heads of service, and then normally it will be democratic services that will circulate on,
right.
on our
okay.
staff.
So if everyone's happy, so if we go back to the recommendation, the committee notes the internal audit annual report for 25-26 and the annual conclusions contained within it. Is everyone happy for that?
Yeah.
To go forward?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Right, moving on to 3 Echo. which is annual government statement. Judith, so welcome to the
committee. So you've got two main items in this one. The first is the updated code of governance. The changes to the code itself are fairly minor and cosmetic. Citra and Solitary didn't make particularly many changes to the code. What they actually did was change the way that we're supposed to do our reviews and the way we're supposed to report the findings of those reviews. So the annual government statement for this year looks different than how it has done previously, and the work that's gone behind the scenes has been slightly different. But so the code itself isn't vastly different. The one thing that it is a slight change, there are seven principles in the code of governance, but when we adopted it previously, we merged two of them and we batched them together. But now pull those back apart so we do directly align with the recommended framework. So the committee are going to be asked to recommend approval of that to full council. What you've then got is the annual government statement, which summarises and brings together kind of all the work that's gone on through the year, both the work from the risk register, from Stephen's annual audit report, and also the reports that the committee have received. And it also sets out a piece of work that that I've done, the rest of the leadership team have contributed to in terms of reviewing how effective our governance arrangements are. And because we've just done the new code, we'd obviously reviewed that, what we have in place as part of that. So I'm not explaining this very well. So our code of governance sets out what our framework is against recommended practice. So we're told these are all best practice, and then we set out this is what we as council actually have in place. And you've got an illustration in practical terms in Appendix 1, Annex 1, and that kind of lists all the key documents that form all of those components. So that was the first exercise, was mapping out what do we have. I've then done a review with input from colleagues as to how effective that is. Is it operating in practice? And then last but not least, we did another check and went back to the full SIP for Solace Code and said, okay, well, we put in place our framework saying what we do, but actually there were some gaps. There were things that we couldn't fill. So they all then come together and they sit now in the action plan at the end of it. But very much similar to Stephen's report, the overall conclusion for the annual government statement again is that we're giving limited assurance. And it does recognise that actually, yes, there were a few gaps in the framework. There aren't many. It's not so much the gaps that are the problem. It is more the compliance. And again, that feeds back to the messages you've just been hearing from Stephen. And, you know, we have moved forward with some of those things. We've updated a number of key policies and frameworks this year, but they're not yet embedded, they're not rolled out fully. So I'd like to think that next year we will start to see a slightly bit better picture. But as I say, you have a very honest and open and full assessment of where our issues are at the moment, and that's set out in the government statement at the back of the report. And the ask of this committee is, does it reflect your understanding of what you've been hearing over the last 12 months? The information that Stephen's given you tonight, do you think that's a comprehensive list? Do you think there's anything that's missing? And are you content to approve it, I suppose, is the question.
Open to the floor. Would you have? Right, do you want to?
It's a big piece of work.
Eh?
It's a huge piece of work.
I know.
It's almost changing a mindset that's been in place for far too long. Mm. Good is not always available, and maybe getting by is all right. And it's something that I would certainly like to see. We have good quality officers who must be enormously frustrated sometimes that the length of time it takes us to move forward is pedestrian. And our ability to actually enthuse and encourage the good, and let's be frank, remove the not so good, needs to be built into our ethos. And I'm afraid in local government it's sometimes not been there. So I understand your efforts and I applaud your ruggedness in continuing to try and push it forward. And I perhaps would like to see some reduction in focus and have a few wins rather than you trying to move the whole blanket at the same time. I think one or two good stories would help the enthusiasm of everybody. So perhaps I'd like to see not quite so much effort across the whole block, but maybe let's highlight one that's failing and one that's succeeding, and celebrate the one that's succeeding and tell everybody about it, and try and enthuse everybody to reach the same sort of standards.
Happy? So we need a good news story.
We do need a good news story, please.
Have we got one?
There are some positives in that. I mean,
there's some good stuff in there. I think we ought to find a way of being better at telling our good stuff, telling our good stories. Ones that were a bit difficult and somebody found a way around it, and how well they've done. And then we can have an adult conversation about the ones that aren't doing so well. Because, yes, you can move some of the bad stuff up, but not all of it. And sometimes you have to refresh. And if you don't have the ability to do that, it has a really blanketing effect on the people that are trying hard and are succeeding, but are then being held up by the dead weight of the ones that are not moving at all. And we do have to get rid of rubbish sometimes. And I don't know if we've actually got rid of any rubbish in the last 5 years. Well, maybe we have, when we've dressed it up as something else. But, you know, we have good people. We had a lovely meeting last night where we were celebrating some of the stuff that was being done on climate change, and the enthusiasm that was going out into the grassroots doing it. And I thought even my wife might have been impressed by that. She doesn't seem to think I do very much, really. And so it's building on the successes, I think, is actually very successful, because it sparks enthusiasm and thinking they can actually do that and get that result. Maybe I could as well. Not accept that it's too difficult, or there's things happening that's slowing it all down and it's not worth the effort. Let's see if we can find some winners and broadcast it.
Find some winners.
I do take, I mean, one of the options in there is about that learning best practice, so that, yeah, celebrating the successes as part of it. So we do acknowledge that.
Yeah.
I also take on board your point as well that, you know, there is a lot in there, and are there some key things that perhaps might move us forward quicker? So, you know, I'm quite happy to go back and have a look at that, and see if we could maybe structure it in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
I was slightly off topic, but I was quite recently impressed by the enforcement part of the planning
review that. I knew a consultant come in and sorted something out for me that had been outstanding for quite a long while, so it got a bit of a good news story. That's one, yeah.
Yeah, that's process. It's
yeah,
you know what I mean. I'd like to see the enforcement people here and tell me why they're not doing what they should be doing. But I don't think that's this committee's thing.
Just thought you looked at it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's a, if it was a success story, we could do it.
Yeah, well, I see what you mean.
Just internal communications. If we've got a good story, good. How does that get round to everybody? Is it via an email to all staff, or how does a good news story get out to everybody?
It depends what it is. I mean, if it's a specific one-off success, there might be a particular email from the chief executive. We do have weekly notices to staff, so you'll often see there's a regular feature in there, sort of like a compliments corner. So generally, if we've had compliments in from the public, they get reported through that. So we've had a couple of teams that have been nominated through for awards, so they tend to get put in the weekly notices as well. So
and does everybody read the weekly notices?
Well,
not
that. Necessarily.
Okay.
But that's a matter for the individual. They go to everybody,
yeah,
it's up to them when
exactly.
They take the time to read those.
Anything else from Amanda? Right, we're asked that the committee recommends the Code of Governance to Council for approval. Is everyone happy for us to do that?
Yes.
And secondly, that the committee approve the annual governance statement for 25-26 as set out in Appendix 2 and the governance improvement plan as set out in Annex 2. Is everyone happy?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that looks like we've completed our business. So just to clarify, you're going to take back to the leadership team 3.10.
Yes, I'll take back the committee.
And then every four, fourth, three and two written report within within 3 weeks. Yeah. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your attendance. And the next meeting being in September. Okay? Thank you.